Yeah, here we go now, baby. Right back into the action for another day of the week. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Before You Bet, Aaron, live right now on the Covers YouTube and X channel. So if you're watching on YouTube, smash that like and that subscribe button right down there. A lot of great content to be found here on the Covers YouTube channel. So a great big show planned for you guys today. John Middlecoff will be by in a matter of seconds to discuss some of the big storylines in the NFL, get into some of his best bets here for the weekend. Then after that, Wednesday, it's a big John show. John Mettler will be here. He and I breaking down our best bets for the NBA. We combined to go 6-2 yesterday, winning seasons for both of us. Before You Bet is the place to be if you like winners. Okay, if you guys want to participate in the show today, very easy to do so. Hit up that live chat on YouTube, on X. Let us know what you like in the NFL this week. What do you like in the NBA tonight? What do you like in college football? Man, it's all happening for us. All right, let's go to our guy down there in Arizona, John Middlecoff. John, how are we making out?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, man. Busy week last week. Right back to, I had Monday off, actually. I took a rare day off during football season. Back to the grind, though. Back for a big week here. Week 14, the best game of the week happens on Thursday. Lions, Packers, can't wait for that one. But let's kick around a couple of topics here, and let's start with the Kansas City Chiefs. People are turning on the Kansas City Chiefs, John. People are calling them a fraud. The stats aren't pretty. The wins aren't pretty. But they're still the number one seed here in the AFC. They're starting to slip a little bit in futures markets, down to third or fourth to win the Super Bowl. Neck and neck with the Buffalo Bills here to win the AFC. So let's put it like this. How confidently would you take the field over the Chiefs to win the AFC?
I would do it pretty confidently. I would take the field to win the Super Bowl. I would take the field to win the AFC. I think, you know, there are two ways to look at it. One, they're getting criticized because they're not covering. They're winning basically every game. They're 11-1. Every team in the NFL, literally every team in the NFL beside the Lions, would sign up for that record. So, like, I think we're nitpicking them because they're winning closely. They've just, if they had never won a Super Bowl, I think we could be more, they've won back-to-back Super Bowls. I'd argue what they're doing this year, winning closely with the injuries they've had, the offensive tackle situation is an incredible accomplishment. And when we look back in 10, 20 years, it'll be a huge part of, like, God, remember when they went 15-2 and even though they lost to the Bills in the AFC Championship game, it's not a bad, it happened to Tom Brady and Belichick all the time. So I would not take the Chiefs in the playoffs, but it doesn't mean what they're doing right now isn't remarkable.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a theme we see from them each season. We discussed this last week where they get to a period where they're sleepwalking a little bit, but it seems to be a little bit extra here this season.
I don't think they're sleepwalking. I think they're trying. They just, you know, they're limited on offense. Their defense has injuries. Their secondary isn't as good. I mean, last year they had two shutdown corners. Now, you know, they have to pick and choose because you can't pay everybody. Once Snead goes, and then I think Watson got injured in the back end. You just watch them. I mean, the Raiders, if the Raiders can expose you sometimes in run defense, they're one of the best, and they kind of got run on by the Raiders who can't run the ball. So it's just it's hard in the NFL, one. And two, yeah. I just think injuries take a toll. Think how many, you know, from 2018 to last year, they probably averaged, right, three or four games a year. So yeah. That adds up over a six-game period. It's like an extra season. And it's all the same core. It's Chris Jones, it's Travis, it's Patrick. It's a lot of the same guys. Dooney's been there a while now. Like some of their interior offensive line, McDuffie and Karlofskis, while they're in their third year, they have played an extra, what, 6-7 games because of the playoff. So it's just a lot even on some of their younger players. Pacheco, undrafted free agent, you know, broke his leg this year.
Yeah, it's adding up. Okay, let's talk head coach opening. Since we last spoke, Matt Eberflus has been let go by the Chicago Bears. And if you take a look at the league, it's going to be a nice handful of openings here. I don't know about how nice it will be. So open right now, we can assume that the Jets and Saints probably won't be bringing back their interim head coaches. The Jets most likely will not. The Bears are going to be in the market. Likely to have an opening is the Jaguars. Then you have a bunch of maybes. I would say the Raiders as a probably, then the Giants, Cowboys, question marks. Maybe the Bengals might be a long shot. So all this said, Do you think the Bears will have the best opening for a head coach job here going into next season?
Where do we think Sirianni, when it comes to the playoffs, needs to accomplish? Can he lose in the NFC Championship game? He definitely can't lose in one of the first two rounds, right? He can't, because, you know, more than likely he's going to have two home games, because all the best records in the North is going to get spread to wild card. So he's going to be the two seed at worst, potentially the one seed. If he gets the one seed, he basically just avoids that first week. He would have to win that second game at home or he would get fired. The NFC Championship game, could he lose at home to the Packers or the Lions or the Vikings and still keep his job? Like, to me, that would be the curveball.
Wow.
That organization. It's not like he doesn't have a contract extension or whatever. He was on the hot seat coming in. And while they're doing a really good job, it's like, I think we're giving credit to like the coordinators, the play, Howie, sure, adding Saquon. No one's going, God, Saquon or Sirianni on a weekly basis is really scheming them up. And I'm not trying to be super negative on Sirianni, but it is just something to keep an eye on, because their pressure is all going to come down to this next month, the next 2 months, right? That's how the Eagles really judge. So the Bears, all these jobs suck because they all have major issues. You know, the Jags have a $200 million quarterback who we don't think is very good. The Bears had a press conference about their quarter or coach being fired, led by the team president, who's not Bill Parcells or Mike Holmgren, like some former football guy, who is in charge with getting the stadium built. He's a business guy, and he led the thing. Honestly, I felt bad for Ryan Poles. The football guy who built this team is sitting there shotgun, not really saying anything. It was very awkward. So I thought that was a huge red flag for any coach with options, is like, wait, this guy's not the owner. He's not a football guy, but I got to answer to him. That doesn't happen. Name me a good team that happens to, right? Your team in Miami, like Mike McDaniel and the GM answered to Stephen Ross.
Yeah.
Like you know, obviously the GM and the coach have to work together. One person usually gets final say on certain, whether it's in season or the draft or whatever, but it's usually the coach, or I mean the owner who's signing the check, whatever. It's their business. Like any human being that works for a business, there is one human that you have to answer to, or these big corporations are bored. And that's the other thing I was reading in the Bears. It's like McCaskey to the board. It's like, how archaic is the stuff going on there? How did Kevin Warren slide his way in and now is like the grand poobah of all decisions when he's just, bro, just get a stadium built. Stop that. What do you know about football? The Big Ten was worse off when you ran it. It was better before and it's better after since you're gone. I don't know if you watched any of that. That was eye-opening. Like the Texans, they have a big issue, right, with Alshire getting suspended. Casario speaks for the organization.
Yeah.
You know, and because the owner wants him to do it. What is going on with the Bears? I thought it's – we talk about it all the time. Players, all this stuff, it doesn't matter your roster. Football's not like baseball or basketball where you can overcome a lot. That was very telling, and I'm telling you, people in the NFL, any especially candidates, saw that.
So you don't – so there's some obvious dysfunction there. So you don't think – like, obviously, the number one guy on my list would be Mike Vrabel. I think a lot of people would probably agree with that. Some people might say Ben Johnson. Those two guys who are going to be at the top of the list for a lot of teams, you don't think that they would have any interest in the Bears' job because of the structure?
Well, I think there's twofold. There's only so many of these jobs. So if you do want to become a head coach, which Ben Johnson has not shown to this point, right? He's had opportunities, especially last year, turned it down. Turns out that was a pretty good opportunity, right? Yeah. I mean, that's looking back, that was a better opportunity than the Bears, because new owner, ton of money, he's in charge. I'm giving you Adam Peters, the GM. You guys work together, answer to me. And you get Jaden Daniels. Like that's, I would say if he could have a do-over on that one, do you think he'd take a do-over, right? So I 100% these guys are going to be interested. I just think Vrabel's personality of dealing with Kevin Warren, Vrabel's also an Ohio State guy. So Urban Meyer, Ryan Day, like he knows that conference pretty well. And those guys, remember, that guy canceled the conference and it was Justin Fields and Jim Harbaugh who basically forced a riot of like, hey, man, the SEC, the NFL, those all playing, what is going on? So this guy is not really pro football coach, pro football player. He's shown he's more corporate, do whatever it takes to survive. I think he is a major, major red flag. I really do. Now, that doesn't mean, like you said, that Caleb Williams, people are going to like him. They have some good defensive pieces. But, like, do I get any say, or is this guy just telling me what to do? If I want to sign, you know, hey, we have this guy, backup tight end in Detroit. I love him. Three other teams want him. It's worth it for us to pay an extra $1 million. It's like Kevin Warren going, yeah, we can't do that. That's the type of stuff, you know, that like Andy Reid and Veach or DaCosta and Harbaugh or Tom, like they just don't have to deal with. Now, they have equity built over time of success, but do I come in right away and this guy, who I don't even think knows football, is telling me what I can and can't do? It's one thing if it's the owner. Like, you can quibble with Woody or Stephen Ross or these guys all you want. It's their team. Like, they are paying you. To me, it's hard when it's essentially like middle management. Who again, I don't even think knows what he's talking about, which I do think that's a major problem. It's why some of these other jobs actually might be better. At least in New York, I just have to deal with Woody, or the Jags, I have to deal with the cons. I don't have to deal with this guy and the owners and the fans.
Yeah, I felt bad about my Dolphins on Thursday, Thanksgiving, and I thought to myself, well, at least I'm not a Bears fan. Moving on, I want to ask you about the Minnesota Vikings here. So check them out. I think a lot of people, you know, if you're a casual fan, if you're looking at the standings at this point of the season, if you saw the Vikings were 10-2, you might be surprised by that. They're one game behind the Lions, right around seventh on the Super Bowl futures odds board, fourth behind the Packers, actually, in the NFC. I feel like they're still kind of flying under the radar a little bit. So what is your sense of this team? Do you think they are a threat in the NFC, could potentially go on a run to the Super Bowl here?
Well, think about this. There's a couple other 10-2 teams, right? The way we talk about the Eagles is like they could beat anybody. They could cruise to the Super Bowl championship. You know, the way we talk about the Bills, it's like, I think the Bills, this is their year. They're going to beat everybody in the AFC. If they get the one seed, it's a wrap. Then we talk about the Vikings. Well, actually, we don't, because we don't really talk about them that much.
Yeah.
Part of it, I think, is, you know, they have this bridge quarterback who's on pace to have over 30 touchdowns. And like we just talked about, has them at 10-2. You know, they have a defense that's not really full of stars. I mean, they had teams under Zimmer that were less successful record wise than this, but that won a lot of games that felt better. They just, you know, from Dalvin Cook to Diggs to Thielen in his prime to all the guys on defense, the defensive line, Harrison Smith was younger, Kendricks, Xavier Rhodes, like that team was pretty loaded with names. And this team doesn't feel like that really. Beside you remove Justin Jefferson, it's really more of like a coaching situation. It's like what Kevin O'Connell did with Sam Darnold is incredible. It's different because this team is better. But like the Giants a couple years ago, and they only won 9 games. This team could win like 13 or 14. But no one really took them that seriously. That's how it kind of feels right here. But they are right there. I mean, who do you think the Vikings are rooting for Thursday night? Of course, the Packers, right? They have the Lions. All of a sudden, it's like, wait, Minnesota's the number one seed in a couple weeks? Like, that is on the table. I keep, like, even sitting on my couch watching them against the Cardinals. Oh, this is the week they lose like 25-10, right? And then all of a sudden, the fourth quarter, Kyler Murray melts, and Sam Darnold just leads them on touchdown drives. They're a tough team at home. They're a tough team at home, that's for sure.
Yeah, they're good on the road too. And let's talk about their quarterback depth chart here. Sam Darnold has had a quarterback rating of 100 plus in 10 of the 12 games this season. Just 27 years old here, you know, really hitting his stride. He got with the right head coach. Took a little while to get going, but it did get going. And it's not quite a Montana and Steve Young situation, but it is a good problem to have with their quarterback depth chart, because they got J.J. McCarthy sitting there. They invested a lot in him. They picked him in the top half of the first round of the draft. I think a lot of people assumed he was going to be the starter going into week one. But if Darnold finishes strong, maybe he wins a playoff game or two. Did they look to trade McCarthy, and what do you think he could bring back?
Well, here's what I know. If I told every Vikings fan this is what J.J. McCarthy is going to look like in 2 years, they would be doing cartwheels down the hallway, right? There is no guarantee on that with anyone. Even like Caleb Williams is having moments, but a lot of them are now in the second half when they're down big. It's like, what's it like in a tie game throughout the game? You don't know. There's still – like in these real games, like you watch Josh Allen or Mahomes, like it's winning time, the pressure on them to win the game. It's Lamar, whatever. It's way different. I would have a hard time letting him go. I really would. I mean, part of this business is just to find a quarterback.
Yeah.
And you were aggressive and you acquired those two picks, right? And you were in position to trade up if you had to. You got JJ, who you really liked, and then he got hurt. And you found Sam Darnold for relatively cheap. In 49er land right now, it's being discussed. Instead of giving Brock Purdy money, should they just re-sign Sam Darnold? Because there's no disputing who's the more talented player. Right. Yeah. The thing with Sam was like turnovers and bad decisions. Well, now you're watching Purdy. You're like, well, he's not exactly Drew Brees and Peyton Manning right now in terms of decision making. So it's like you might as well take the more explosive arm. And what's Sam Darnold's price point? Like, do I get him? Can I just sign him on like the Kirk Cousins $100 million contract? You know, Derek Carr, what he signed with the Saints? Because if we're talking that's and you're getting a guy that can throw 30, 35 touchdowns, that's got to be one of the best deals in sports, right?
Absolutely. So no quarterback controversy there. Yeah.
I would keep him. I mean, the other thing is,
he's only 27 years old.
He tore his knee and then it didn't heal correctly. I mean, that has to have them pretty concerned, right?
Yeah. A little sketchy there. And speaking of sketchy, let's talk the Vikings former quarterback, Kirk Cousins. His last three games, he's thrown 0 touchdown passes, 6 interceptions, highlighted by throwing 4 versus the Chargers on Sunday. 2 very ugly ones. That pick 6 is one of the worst pick 6s you're ever going to see. He throws one into the end zone here as well. And my question for you is, how short of a leash does Kirk Cousins have now? Because this is a team that's still in first place. They're very much still in the mix. 3 of their last 4 games, Giants, Raiders, Panthers. Now, people will say, well, they're going to play him because they invested so much in him. Well, guess what? They invested a lot in Michael Penix as well. Heck, Do you think we see Penix here in December, John?
I mean, think about some of the defensive players that they could have had. You know, obviously Mitchell for the Eagles looks like a future all-pro at corner. Jared Verse looks like the next version of Khalil Mack. You don't think those guys would completely help Atlanta, who's not bad on defense, but would those guys would take their team, especially if you put Verse on that team. I mean, looking back, here's the problem. Is they were so out of whack with their timing on signing him, is they put all their chips on the table, then they fell in love with Penix after the fact. Like, they should have realized before they signed Cousins that Penix was going to be in the top 10. A lot of people after the season ended didn't even think it was a first-round pick. I like Michael Penix. But at this point in time, all your chips are in the middle of the table. You're riding this season out with Kirk Cousins. He looked atrocious in that game against the Chargers. Now, the Chargers with Minter have one of the better defenses, but you know, the last couple years before he tore his Achilles, Kirk Cousins was playing really well. Like, he had become, you know, he's never going to be a top 5 or 6 quarterback, but he was firmly in that 7 to 11 range where it's like, this guy, if we do a good enough job building our team, we're going to the playoffs. Might not go that far in the playoffs, but every team would sign up for going to the playoffs every year. Look at the arm strength right now. I mean, the 1 pick 6, the ball just floated up there. And, you know, the decision-making, when he gets out of whack and the decision-making gets poor because he doesn't have a huge arm, and, you know, for his arm strength to look good, because it can when he's, like, planted, steps into the ball, but he's not the top guys where he can, like, back shoulder, or, I mean, back foot and be off platform. Like, Jordan Love. Jordan Love never needs to step into a pass. Rodgers forever didn't either, until now. And now he's 40 years old, and the ball floats on him. Cousins, if it's not perfect and it gets a little muddied in the pocket, balls go all over the place, and that just becomes a disaster. Now, Penix is kind of he's not Jaden Daniels or anything. I mean, he's a pocket player as well. So maybe you got to eat it this year, and next year you go to him. The problem is, what is Cousins' trade value? Makes $40+ million a year. He's old. He looks, you know, basically you would have to eat some money probably. Like, if I was taking Cousins back, it's like, yeah, I'll take him if I'm the Raiders or some team desperate. But, like, he's a $20 million player, not a $40 million. So you got to eat some money. And I'm not giving you anything of value, right? So what you eat the money, I eat the money, I'll give you, like, a 4th or 5th round pick. It's really, like, not a very sexy transaction, I think. And he's got a no-trade clause.
Yeah, and he's probably not coming in to be the backup either. Like, well, if he's waving the no trade, it's going to start somewhere, right?
Well, exactly. So it's like he doesn't have that much leverage because he's not just going to sit there as the backup. They're not going to want him there. But he's also not just like, yeah, I don't really want to play there. I don't just want to go in there with Bryce Young, who I know you want. So it kind of limits the options really quick. And let's face it, usually guys like him at this point in time in their career, maybe they do that trade in March, and then all of a sudden they're drafting a guy in April. Hell, it just happened to him here, and they gave him a bunch of money.
Right on. Okay, let's get into a couple of best bets here. A bit of a theme here. You like three road dogs this week. Let's start with the Browns, plus 6.5. Of course, they upset the Steelers on Thursday Night Football a week or two ago there in the snow. And you like the Browns to, at the very least, keep this one close.
It's just a lot of points. I mean, this is a team. It's pretty crazy when you watch them play. Obviously, Jameis is an absolute roller coaster, a fun roller coaster to watch. But they are a real team with Jameis Winston playing. I mean, they were not a real team with Deshaun Watson. And they're actually would be a really, really good team if they had a good quarterback because they have a lot of talent. And, you know, even with Myles Garrett kind of limping every other play, I mean, he's an elite player. They're missing their middle linebacker who's a stud, but their DBs are good. The offensive players, I mean, their scheme, their coach is good. We know these divisional games. Like, this is not a situation where it's like the Giants when they play, you know, the Eagles again. It's like, you know, they got no shot. Some of these games, like, you're just like, this one, like, you watch this team. They have the talent. They're comfortable playing this team. Obviously, Pittsburgh, you know, this is a pretty big revenge moment for them. They can really, you win a couple more games, like, you're a lock to win the division, get that home playoff game. But you watch that. I feel like the Browns have a lot of momentum. You know, they've really played pretty well under Jameis for the most part. Offensively, he gives them hope. They're an explosive offense. And he's just unfazed. Like, you could sack him. You can hit him in the face. He can throw a pick. He just gets right back up. And next play, like, he's like a goldfish. He doesn't even remember what just happened.
Yeah, tough stretch of games here for the Steelers, too. Of course, they won the shootout versus the Bengals, and they have this game. And then next week, it is the Battle of Pennsylvania taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. So who knows, maybe a bit of a sandwich spot.
Where is that game against Pittsburgh, Philly? Is that in Philly?
I think it's in Pittsburgh. I don't know for sure, though.
That's great. I mean, that's a tough little stretch. If the Eagles win on the road in Baltimore and on the road in Pittsburgh, we might be looking at a Super Bowl champ.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me in the least. Okay, so a couple of weeks ago, Seattle beat the Cardinals up in Seattle. Now they are in Arizona, where they are 9-1-1 straight up in their last 11 games there. So they go to Arizona and just win. Of course, that's all under Pete Carroll. So we'll see if the new coaching regime can carry that trend forward. But they are a plus 2.5 point dog, and you like them to cover.
Well, I think one thing you're seeing with Arizona is their team is not that talented that they were even in the mix to, we're like, is this team going to win 9 or 10 games? you could have voted Gannon coach of the year. And the other thing is the quarterback, you know, Jameis, it's funny when we talk about him and he gets discussed a lot because it feels like some of his moments have where everyone's watching. Arizona does not play in that many games where millions upon millions of people are watching. If they played in like 4 straight primetime games, the takes on Kyler Murray would be all over the place because he can have a play where you're like, is that the greatest play I've ever seen? And then you can go, is that the worst interception I've ever seen? And he's just, it's hard to trust him, right? And one thing with Seattle is like, they're pretty explosive on offense. If Geno's playing well, built for a dome, they've gotten healthier on defense. And what's happened? Their star defensive coordinator, who Baltimore... If Baltimore could do it over again, they'd be like, what's Seattle paying you to be their head coach? We will double it to keep you as a defensive coordinator, right? He's awesome. And if he was an offensive guy, just because the way we talk about the Ben Johnsons and the McVays and the Kyles and the LaFleurs, that's how we would talk about Mike McDonald. He's a stud. Like, I think they're not only covering, they're going to win this game. I think they're going to cruise to this, you know, 10 might win this division by a couple games. But it's like clearly now Seattle's the best team now that they're healthy. I mean, how about that Leonard Williams play? That guy's a freak. What a move by John Schneider adding him. Like, he's been fantastic.
Yeah, I think it was 2 weeks ago when the Cardinals were first place in the division. The Seahawks had the longest odds in the division to win the NFC West. I think they were around 6-1. And now they are in the driver's seat.
Well, so. I think the Rams, I know they just beat the Saints. I had the Saints in that game, so I was pretty dialed in. They do something's off with them. Like last year, they had a lot of momentum coming down the stretch, and you're like, this is a real team. Like this could win some. I don't feel that way about them right now. Do you?
No, I did. I mean, they're very inconsistent. They hit a point, you know, when they got Kapp and Nacua back and they beat the Vikings. I beat them 30-20, I believe, in a Thursday night football game.
They look
and then
good
you think, okay,
game.
They're going to get it going again. Then the Miami Dolphins come to town and they just
they haven't that game they over. Haven't been the same since that game. their offensive line starting in that game has been all over the map. And then Stafford's been banged up. He just hasn't quite been as dominant as he was last year. I think that's been a problem.
Okay. The season from hell continues for the San Francisco 49ers. Just getting their ass kicked at this point now. It's gotten really bad. Despite that, though, they are a four-point favorite at home to the Chicago Bears, looking to get that new coach bump. That's an angle that a lot of people like betting into. And you like the Bears here as a four-point underdog to cover the spread.
The Bears are playing better than the 49ers. The Bears aren't winning these games, right? Their field goal is getting blocked. Their coach just lets 30 seconds run off the clock. But they are in a position to win or tie these games. The Niners are getting boat raced. The Niners lost the last two games 73-20. Now, you can say they're two Super Bowl contenders on the road. Okay, but they didn't even have a pulse beside, like, you could remove, I don't know, a total of 10 minutes from both games. And now coming into this game, like Trent Williams has like a legit injury and he just had a family travesty. Like I doubt he's going to play. Bosa's legitimately hurt, like has hip pointers. And even when the last time we saw him come out of the game, like he was wincing in pain. And it turns out it was like his other hip and he'd already been battling. It's like, that ain't good. McCaffrey's gone. Mason, who was McCaffrey's replacement, who's a good player, is now gone as well. I mean, they're claiming dudes off Jets practice squad. I mean, they are just – Debo is not the same player. Ayuk's long gone. Fred Warner's dealing with a broken bone in his foot, so he's getting shot up. He's not the same player. Their whole team's hurt. And the Bears are just, again, not winning games, but they have been pretty competitive. And you watch them, it's like, well, there's Rome, there's DJ Moore, there's Keenan Allen making plays. Like, all their guys are on the field. And, yeah, it used to be the Bears' defense or offensive line struggles. Well, it's like, who the – Hargrave – Bosa, they don't have any of these guys. So I kind of like the Bears just to win this game. And it's not the 49ers aren't tanking or whatever. I just think they're just running on empty. How do you overcome this?
Oh, with that in mind, last question before you go. So you can look at the 49ers thing from a couple perspectives. You can say, hey, they've been very unlucky with all the injuries this season, which is true. And you can also look at it and say, they're old. So how well positioned do you think they are to bounce back and return to their status as a legit Super Bowl contender next season?
Well, I think getting the ninth pick in the draft, right? Basically losing out or winning one more game allows you to just end the season on January instead of playing those three or four extra games. So everyone takes a deep breath, gets extra rest time. You get cheap labor who are impact players, because it's not just the first round. You know, when they draft 30th every year or 28th or 31st, it's every round. So now, you know, you could get two or three starters. The 49ers draft pretty well in the third day. They struggle high. They've been very hit or miss, which in fairness, it's hard because you're drafting at the end of the round. Well, if I'm drafting eighth or ninth, well, I can get Jared Verse or Jalen Carr. I have access to the top players who get pushed down a little bit because of wide receivers and quarterbacks. Right. So that can help a lot. And then you have to make a tough decision or two. Like Debo Samuel had an incredible run in 2021 where he basically carried the 49ers, not just to the playoffs, but to the NFC Championship game. That guy feels like long gone. So, you know, they did it this offseason with Eric Armstead. It's, you know, it feels like the Debo train has kind of come to an end. And one major issue, though, is McCaffrey. You know, he hurts his PCL, which I think most people just assume maybe his Achilles ripped when that happened, but he has two, like, are his legs betraying him? And if that's the case, then that, you know, they gave him kind of a contract bump and guaranteed some money. That's a problem because they kind of need him to be around. And he, right before he got hurt, he was like showing some life in that Bills game.
Yeah, that will be a very interesting division going into next season. Seahawks.
No one's really running. You know, Seattle doesn't have a quarterback. Stafford's 37 years old. Arizona doesn't have as much talent as the other three teams. So the Niners, that's where they do benefit. They're not in a division with the Eagles, the Ravens, and the Chiefs. You know, it's like you can take a deep breath. The talent. If you get 10 wins most years, I think you're going to feel pretty good about your chances, right?
Yeah, you got to get into that dance, right? Then who knows 100%. What can happen. Right on, my man. All right, John, we will leave it at that. But best of luck with all your content this week and your picks on the weekend. And we will look forward to speaking with you again next Wednesday.
I like Georgia as well. Hammer Georgia.
Georgia. Let's go. You heard it here from John. All right, buddy. Good luck. There we go, the man. Yeah, we're going to be asking John about some more college football stuff going forward as well with the playoff and bowl season right around the corner. Okay, let us now switch gears over to the National Basketball Association. Talking it with the ass man, the magic ass man, whose magic got stomped. Yeah. I don't even look at magic games anymore because I'm, 0-3 fading them on the show. But I was kicking myself. You went to the game last night. We'll get you to give it a little review of the experience here at Little Caesars Arena for Bucks Pistons. I'm looking at that game, and I don't know what it was with me yesterday. I was, my picks went 2-1. So the picks, if I can go 2-1 every single day, hey, I'm going to take that, man, when you're picking spreads, totals, and minus 110 props. But I'm looking at that game. It's Bucks favored by 4. It goes down to 3.5. It goes down to 3. By the time it tipped off, it was down to 2 points. And I'm thinking, what gives here? And I looked at that. I looked at the stats. And I said, I should be taking the Bucks here. But some reason, the little voice in my head was saying, no, just stay away. And maybe it was a trust thing with the Bucks, you know, that they have turned the corner a little bit. But I was kicking myself. And I'm promising myself, just go with your instincts, Joe. So, I was kicking myself for that one. But how was the experience at Little Caesars Arena? Did you enjoy some Little Caesars pizza?
I actually did have Little Caesars pizza because they do like deep dish in the arenas in the States, and it's way better than what you get at Hot and Ready here in Canada. But I will say the court, it's not as bright in the arena. When it's on TV, it's like you see. When it's there, it's not as noticeable as you think it would be. On TV, it's like, whoa. But when you're there, it doesn't really stand out. I mean, the Bucks were shooting, I think at one point they're shooting 70% from three. So when you could tell like they couldn't guard Giannis. They were double teaming him. They were leaving 3-point shooters open. They were cashing every single three. Then the second half, they stopped double teaming and Giannis starts making his own jump shots. And like at that point, if you're the Pistons, like good night. What are you like? See you next time. Like, what are you going to do? Like, they're hitting shots on both coverages. I will say, because we kind of grouped, I feel like the 76ers and Bucks together at some point. And now the Bucks have really, they've turned the corner and the 76ers are still Joel Embiid, Paul George, not playing tonight. But
Joel Embiid's ramping up again to play. Hey, congratulations, man. Ramping up for what, the third time this season?
Yeah, it does feel like the Bucks have figured out better lineups. And like they put Andre Jackson in the starting lineup. And it was very obvious, like his defense against Cade Cunningham in person was very obvious. And he's someone who doesn't need to touch the ball in offense. I think that plays a lot better with the starting lineup of Damian Lillard and Giannis. And then when they go to like the split minutes where like Lillard goes to the bench and it's just Giannis, then they're bringing in the shooters of like Gary Trent Jr., AJ Green, Bobby Portis, and like the same with Lillard. When it's just Lillard on the floor, then they bring in those more shooters. So I do think they've done a really good job of mixing up the lineups and like Doc Rivers and like how he's structuring their minutes and stuff. They look like a much better team. And like, as I was sitting there, I was just like, they still have Chris Middleton. Like Chris Middleton at some point is coming back. So I do think they're a much better team in the Eastern Conference than we kind of given them credit for. And lastly, my Magic, that was almost a disaster by the Knicks. Cause if they would have blown out the Magic, they're up by like 30 at one point. If they would have kept going, they would have brought the Celtics right back in the NBA Cup. Yeah, so I don't know.
I saw you tweeting about that.
It was like dangerously close. I'm like, there's like at some point, maybe someone touched Tom Thibodeau on the shoulder. Like, hey, like, you know, if we want to win this thing, don't bring the Celtics back into this. Like dial back, sub them out, all those things. So I wasn't watching. I was driving home. But man, if they would have brought the Celtics back into it, that would have been a huge whiff by the Knicks.
Todd Albury in the chat says, at least he got a gold medal. In regards to Joel Embiid, hey man, this is like this is not going to end well for Joel Embiid in Philadelphia. Just a great regular season player, and that is it. And he doesn't show up for 33% of the games, for God's sake. So he's not going to get healthier as he gets older, people. Neither is Zion. Zion's probably peaked as an NBA player already, unfortunately.
I think I just saw a tweet. It was like, Zion's not even remotely ready to come back for the Pelicans. And then I saw another one being like, they're still committed to building this franchise around him. And I'm just like, what is going on with the Pelicans?
You got
to
get ahead of it. It's rare that people, I always say this, and it's rare that people do this where, you know, the Patriots used to do this with players, not superstar players that you build a franchise around, but they would say the expression, it's better to trade a guy a year too early than a year too late, right? I feel like they're really bad with this in the NBA, unless a guy forces himself out. But, you know, Joel Embiid, it's going to come around. He's going to get traded for, you know, maybe a starter, a fringe all-star, and 13 second-round draft picks. You know, because that's how things go in the NBA. So, yeah, we'll see what goes on there, you know. Those goddamn 76ers. Okay, so... decent looking board here in the NBA. We got the Lakers looking to bounce back. We have a bunch of teams in the second game of a back-to-back. And we got some big-time stars for some player props here tonight, some good-looking spots. And let me start with perhaps the biggest star in the league. Still, a man who goes by the name of LeBron James. I'm going to take him to go over his point total of 21.5. And I think LeBron, considering the opponent, the location of the game, he's going to be ultra motivated coming into this one. He had a rock bottom performance last time out. He scored 10 points, a season low versus the Timberwolves in a game where the Lakers scored just 80 points. If this team is serious at all, everybody in that locker room better come out ready for this game in Miami, who is a great opponent for LeBron to bounce back against. He always brings it when he is in Miami, taking on the Miami Heat. Last five games in Miami, totals of 30, 27, 33, 28, and 51 points. Go back to his second run with the Cavs after he played for the Heat, just an avalanche of 30-point games in Miami as well. And yeah, he's struggling. He's in an absolute slump right now. The worst slump he's had in a while, probably. But the shot volume remains high. He still leads the Lakers in shot attempts over the last five games. So I do like him to go over 21.5 points. Okay, on to another high-profile player, a man by the name of Giannis. What do you like for him?
Yeah, BYB points for off. I'm going Giannis Antetokounmpo over 32.5 points minus 108. It's just coincidence that I happened to see him play in person yesterday. He's playing the Atlanta Hawks, second night of a back-to-back. A lot of teams on a back-to-back in this slate, but he didn't play the entire fourth quarter. He kind of got pulled pretty early in the third quarter too. His minutes were down, so you're not too worried about that. When you just look at the Atlanta Hawks, it's like, who's guarding him as an individual defender? So Zachary Risacheit probably is the best option, but like, he's a rookie. Like, you're gonna put a rookie on Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, Giannis Antetokounmpo is a tank, like, athletically and stuff. I just don't see how they can guard him. And then last night, you know, when I was at the game, he hit, I was like, five or six like mid-range jumpers. Like, this guy looked like Kevin Durant out there. I was like, what is going on? So if his jump shot is locked in, and it's, you know, if he looked very, very confident shooting it, if he's knocking down jump shots, this 32.5 just to me just looks too low. The projections were higher. You're playing the Hawks. I mean, I think Doncic went for like 70 against the Hawks last year. You never really know what the Hawks are going to do. Are they going to double, or are they just going to let the superstar score and kind of try to choke off everyone else? After what happened to the Pistons last night, they might not double. I mean, the Bucks shot, like I said, they shot like, it was like 21 for 36 from three. That's not a good outcome either. So 32.5 seems like a really big number, but against the Hawks, probably not high enough. So give me the over.
Okay, I like his teammate, Damian Lillard. We told you we got a lot of stars today. I like him to go over. His point total set at 24.5 points. So you might say, but Joe, it's in the second game of a back-to-back. Don't sweat it, baby. He's averaging 27.7 points per game in three games in the second of a back-to-back this season. This includes a 31-point game and also a 33-point game against the Boston Celtics. This is a really good matchup for him because Atlanta cannot defend the perimeter. They are allowing the most threes per game in the NBA over the last 10 games. it may be just a coincidence, but it is worth pointing out. Typically, when he goes head-to-head with Trae Young, he lights up the Atlanta Hawks here. So he's topped this number 24.5 in 6 of 7 career games versus Young with 5 separate 30-point games. I like him to go over 24.5. Okay, from LeBron to Giannis to Damian Lillard, we told you guys we have a lot of stars. Next up, Dyson Daniels.
Yeah, Dyson Daniels. The great barrier thief. If you don't know, he leads the NBA in steals, and he's from Australia. I think one of the best nicknames we've given out this year in the NBA.
I like it.
Yeah, so he's going to be the primary defender on Damian Lillard. So that should kind of keep him on the floor for his defense. I mean, obviously, they're going to try to get him off of him and match up on Trae Young, which you were just talking about, because Trae Young's not a good defender. But the fact that Lillard's on the other side, this should keep Daniels on the floor. Not that his minutes are ever in trouble, but it just makes you think that they could be elevated and more secure. The one thing also is Lillard's defense. Lillard is one of like the worst defenders in the entire NBA on the perimeter. That's why they're putting Andre Jackson in the starting lineup. So Andre Jackson will probably be trying to, you know, choke off Trae Young on the other end of the floor. They're not just going to let Lillard stand in the corner. You should see Dyson Daniels get involved in some actions, because they're going to want to make Lillard guard. And if he's just more involved offensively, that kind of brings the assists into play. And this is, you know, Dyson Daniels, I think we just bet him over 3.5 about plus money, and he's gone under a couple times. This is 2.5 now plus money. And I was, even that one, I was like, hey, take the 5 plus all. I mean, this is, he's gone under multiple times in a row here. So it's sent this price down. 2.5 plus 130 is quite the number for Dyson Daniels. So I'm playing the over. I love this bet.
Let's go Daniels. Okay, my favorite total bet of the night in the NBA. We are off to Brooklyn, where the Pacers are in town. Total 225, and I am going over. A lot of over bets today. So some trends, some stats. Let's look at the trends first. So consecutive unders are rare for the Pacers, who are 10-2 to the over after a loss. This is convenient because they lost last night to the Raptors, and the game did go under. Over their last 20 games, they've gone under in consecutive games just one time. These are two dog shit defenses. Let's not sugarcoat it. Let's call it what it is. They are 26th and 27th in defensive rating over the last 10 games, 24th and 28th in points allowed, each allowing a lot of freebies. Expect a lot of action at the free throw line. You love to see that when you are on and over. And really good matchup here. Good three-point shooting versus bad three-point defense. Each of these teams in the top 10 to three-point percentage over the last 5 games. However, on the defensive end, each is near the bottom of the league in three-point defense. Let's go over 225 Pacers. Nets, and you have a player prop for this game. What do you like?
Yeah, I went Benedict Mathurin over 1.5 assists. So like you were saying, the defenses, they're also just depleted. Like Ben Simmons is injured, Dorian Finney-Smith's injured on the one side. You have Nesmith, Nembhard injured. Those are the better defenders on both teams. So that's also creating different matchups. I was looking at this. I feel like the market is more focused on Tyrese Halliburton, TJ McConnell when you're looking at Pacers assists. And Mathurin's just kind of flying under the radar here as a starter who's playing, you know, 32 plus minutes a night. You know, his last 6 games, he's averaging 5 potential assists per game. That's a lot for a guy who has a total of 1.5 assists and you only need 2 to get over. That's pretty high. And the one thing I do really like is, so Nembhard was injured. He came back. He played yesterday in Toronto and was on a minutes restriction. He played sub 20 minutes. If you're on a minutes restriction, you're playing sub 20. I feel like you're probably not playing on the second night of a back-to-back. So if he's out, it just kind of creates a scenario where I think Mathurin, his minutes are more secure, his usage, all those things. I just don't think Nembhard will be playing, and if he does, it's probably not high minutes. So I just kind of like that for Mathurin's minutes. And like you said, like Dennis Schroeder on the perimeter, Jalen Wilson, all these guys, he'll be able to get in the lane, do what he has to do to get assists. So give me Mathurin over 1.5 even money.
Now, do you know anyone who has the first name Benedict in your personal life?
I do not. No,
I don't know any Benedicts either. What about, I was thinking of this, the player on the Seattle Seahawks, his name's Kobe Bryant, right?
Yeah.
I think Kobe Bryant on his come up, that would have inspired a lot of people maybe to name their son Kobe. Do you know anyone by the name of LeBron in your personal life?
No, I don't. But
I would love to meet somebody named LeBron. I would love them instantly.
I'm actually having a kid soon in like April, and it's going to be a boy. And we're trying to come up with names. And I was joking. No, not LeBron. I was joking with my wife so many times.
Middle name.
naming it Franz for Franz Wagner, and she gets so mad every single time.
Franz Wagner? Franz LeBron Mettler. I would push for LeBron for the middle name. Yeah. I know some people, you know, take issue with his politics and whatnot, but, you know, he lived up to the hype, and I think you'd be setting your child up for success. Middle name, LeBron. I think that is the way to go. Okay. Speaking of LeBron, recapping the best bets, I can go over 21.5 points. Pacers Nets over 225. Damian Lillard, nothing but overs today. I love it. Over 24.5 points. Giannis over 32.5. Dyson Daniels over 2.5 assists. And Benedict, don't know many Benedicts. Benedict LeBron Mettler for your son's name.
Benedict Mathurin. Benedict Mathurin is Canadian too.
Well, there you go. Oh, so many connections. All come together. This is just beautiful. Okay, so that does it for the Wednesday edition of the show. Great big one planned for tomorrow, though, because we got a massive Thursday night football game. Packers and Lions. Going to be all over that. Jake Butt will be here. Ask him about a little bit of flag planning going on. Ohio State, Michigan. Get his thoughts on the championship games coming up this weekend. Then, of course, John Mettler, NBA. I think there's 8 or 9 games tomorrow, so a lot to sink our teeth into. Producer Mick is going to be busy putting the show together tomorrow. So thank you to both Johns for joining today. Thank you to producer Mick. Did a great job today. Thank you to BetMGM. Make sure you check them out for all your sports betting needs. And thank you to all the great viewers for tuning in today. Best of luck with your bets tonight, and we will catch you again tomorrow. Let's go, Benedict!